Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret, your host, and I want to welcome you this evening. I hope that that classic reggae was sort of getting you in the mood of feeling the breeze, the trade winds just drifting across your face and pretending you're under your favorite tree, enjoying this wonderful music. And I don't know what's going on because I told it to stop, and it's still playing. Okay, I got the message. So I want to welcome our callers. I see we have our regular fans and our Skypers, and wherever you're calling in from, I want to welcome you and to tell you how, as usual, I'm so excited about discovering new things about Jamaica's past, because the objective of Backyard Labrish is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. And you know, as I'm sure most of our listeners and people on the internet know, there's a lot of information now and more coming online every single day about Jamaica, some good, some bad. But what we do here in the backyard each week is just that. We find things to celebrate, to enlighten the world about, and of course, hopefully, preserve some of this wonderful culture that we're discovering. And with that said, I want to really let all our listeners know, as I'm sure most of my listeners already know, how grateful we are to Professor Joy Lumsden, who is retired and lives in Jamaica, but continues to do just wonderful research in interesting stories of the past. And tonight we're going to bring you all of some of her material, and I have just been so intrigued and thrilled because I like interesting stories. So today, by the way, I just want to tell the listeners that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish, and we're here each week at 8 o'clock to do just what I said, celebrate. This is not a political platform, or we're not here to judge who's wrong and who's right and what's going on in the world. We're just here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. So with that said, I want to ask any listeners that might be listening online, if you want to interact with us, you will have to call in on 1-718-766-4558. However, you can always go to our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and all our shows are archived there. So I want to welcome you again. Tonight, we are going to be talking about some different old ladies tonight. Last week was for the gentlemen, and there are several of them that Dr. Lumsden has brought to light. But today belongs to the ladies. So the first one I'm going to discuss, perhaps most people didn't know, and of course I must say to my listeners on the board, remember you can always raise your hands by hitting 1 on your keyboard to join the Labrish, because for foreigners who don't know what a Labrish is, it's when people get together to talk about a subject or subjects, you know, in a casual, relaxed manner. It's not necessarily a gossip. It's just sharing information. So that's what we do here each week. Now, we have some interesting ladies we're going to talk about tonight. One, a baroness, and several who were female doctors, and a young lady who actually did some good work in Africa. So let me first start with the interesting information that I don't even know if a lot of Canadians know this, but Susan Agnes MacDonald Nee Bernard was the second wife of Sir John A. MacDonald, who was the very first Prime Minister of Canada, and she was born in Jamaica. So I want to tell you how Dr. Lumsden states it in her own words. She said, until October of last year, I did not have the year she was referring to written down, but I can imagine it was not so long ago. I never heard of Susan Agnes Bernard or Baroness MacDonald of Earnscliffe, let alone that she had any connection with Jamaica. Then I read a most curious item in a Gleaner from 1892, and the game was afoot. Who was Monkey Baron, and how had his daughter come to be Baroness MacDonald of Earnscliffe? That's apparently what she was asking herself. I soon discovered that Canada knew quite a bit about the story, and Jamaica, practically nothing. So she, as she said, the game was afoot. I can feel her passion. You know, I've never met Dr. Lumsden, but she sounds to be a very interesting person, because once she gets on, that's when you know you have a real history buff. Once she get on to some information, then she will go not stop until she sort of pieces it together. So now this is Dr. Lumsden's report on what she discovered. Now Susan Agnes Bernard's story begins, strangely enough, at Dirty Pit near Spanish Town. Now it sounds better if we call it Bernard Lodge, but that had only been its name for a few years when she was born. She was born there in 1836. Her parents, Thomas James and Theodore Fox Bernard, had moved out of Spanish Town to the property at Dirty Pit sometime between 1830. And most of their 7 children were born and grew up there. Now, you know, 2 baby daughters died in 34. So Susan Agnes, the last child, was the one daughter along with 4 brothers. I can't even imagine people having so many children during those times. Anyway, 7 children. Information on her ancestor is in short supply. She didn't have a lot. We don't really know where she was, you know, her ancestors came from. We know that she was born in Dirty Pit. Now, there were Originally coming from France via England, probably, she, you know, figures out, early in the 19th century, they seem to have been mostly in the northwest of the island and St. Thomas. Now, there was some property that was owned in St. Elizabeth, and a link is suggested to Alexander Mackenzie. Now, all of these names are very, very popular names in Jamaica. And I'm sure that, you know, like everything else, there were a lot of children that were not accounted for, I mean, historically. Anyway, most of these people settled in the parish after surviving the collapse of the disastrous Darien expedition, which had attempted a settlement in Panama at the end of the 17th century. Now, Thomas Bernard owned several properties, some in the west of the island, and held a number of important offices, such as a member of the Governor's Council, an assistant judge of the Supreme Court, big shot, none of which indicated a secure financial position. Now, in 1840, the family moved back into Spanish Town. Now, the Bernard boys were sent to school in England, while Agnes, Susan Agnes, had lessons with her mother, and then at a school in Spanish Town. Now, I want to do a little sidebar here. You can imagine we're talking 1834 when this woman was born, and I'm thinking that perhaps it was a midwife or somebody who might have delivered her, because I don't know if there were established doctors. And I remember when we read a lot about the history back then, they talked about, you know, several of the African slaves acting in the capacity of doctors and midwives for the plantation owners. So I just thought it was interesting. Anyway, let me go on with Dr. Lumsden's story. And pardon me, I think my phone is sort of acting up there, so I'm hoping it's not too disturbing. Well, anyway, Susan Agnes moved with her mother into Kingston, and then in August of 1851, they sailed for England on the Great Western to live with relatives there because the father died of cholera. There was an outbreak in 1850. Now, this story really gets interesting now. Now, she and her mother spent about 3 years in England, and she talked about them being, you know, peasants, almost peasants in England, really as poor relations. They did visit the Great Exhibition, but traveling was too expensive for them to do very much. A good deal of the time was spent acquiring or improving the accomplishments expected of a Victorian young lady: singing, drawing, and French. But as it turned out, Susan was not really cut out to be very proper. She was not cut out to be a proper Victorian young lady. Now, here's the turn of events. Early in 1854, Theodora and Susan Agnes set out for Canada to join a brother who was there in Ontario. They all lived in Barrie, just outside Toronto, and I suppose my Toronto friends can know where these places are, but I'm sure none of them think that the first Prime Minister of Canada had anything to do with Jamaica, so I'm sure this will be quite revealing to them. Anyway, Susan Agnes wanted to be called Susie, and she decided for the future she intended to be Agnes. I suppose she was getting a little more proper. She was confirmed in the Anglican Church, establishing her denominational affiliations for the rest of her life. and she also began to develop her love of the Canadian landscape, which was another lifelong enthusiasm. Fishing and sledding were two outdoors activities she especially enjoyed. Now, in 1857, her brother, who was an attorney, accepted the offer of a position of private secretary to John MacDonald. He was then the leader of the Liberal
Love Talk Radio. Love Talk Radio.
Would someone on the board please put up their hand? The technical dip. I need to see a hand up.
Hello.
You can hear?
Yes, I can hear.
All righty. Thanks. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret, your host, and I want to welcome you this evening. I hope that that classic reggae was sort of getting you in the mood of feeling the breeze, the trade winds just drifting across your face and pretending you're under your favorite tree, enjoying this wonderful music. And I don't know what's going on because I told it to stop, and it's still playing. Okay, I got the message. So I want to welcome our callers. I see we have our regular fans and our Skypers, and wherever you're calling in from, I want to welcome you and to tell you how, as usual, I'm so excited about discovering new things about Jamaica's past, because the objective of Backyard Labrish is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. And you know, as I'm sure most of our listeners and people on the internet know, there's a lot of information now and more coming online every single day about Jamaica, some good, some bad. But what we do here in the backyard each week is just that. We find things to celebrate, to enlighten the world about, and, of course, hopefully preserve some of this wonderful culture that we're discovering. And with that said, I want to really let all our listeners know, as I'm sure most of my listeners already know, how grateful we are to Professor Joy Lumsden, who is retired and lives in Jamaica, but continues to do just wonderful research in interesting stories of the past. And tonight we're going to bring you all of some of her material, and I have just been so intrigued and thrilled because I like interesting stories. So today, by the way, I just want to tell the listeners that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish, and we're here each week at 8 o'clock to do just what I said, celebrate. This is not a political platform, or we're not here to judge who's wrong and who's right and what's going on in the world. We're just here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. So with that said, I want to ask any listeners that might be listening online, if you want to interact with us, you will have to call in on 1-718-766-4558. However, you can always go to our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and all our shows are archived there. So I want to welcome you again. Tonight, we are going to be talking about some different old ladies tonight. Last week was for the gentlemen, and there are several of them that Dr. Lumsden has brought to light. But today belongs to the ladies. So the first one I'm going to discuss, perhaps most people didn't know, and of course I must say to my listeners on the board, remember you can always raise your hands by hitting 1 on your keyboard to join the Labrish, because for foreigners who don't know what a Labrish is, it's when people get together to talk about a subject or subjects, you know, in a casual, relaxed manner. It's not necessarily a gossip. It's just sharing information. So that's what we do here each week. Now, we have some interesting ladies we're going to talk about tonight. One, a baroness, and several who were female doctors, and a young lady who actually did some good work in Africa. So let me first start with the interesting information that I don't even know if a lot of Canadians know this, but Susan Agnes MacDonald Nee Bernard was the second wife of Sir John A. MacDonald, who was the very first Prime Minister of Canada, and she was born in Jamaica. So I want to tell you how Dr. Lumsden states it in her own words. She said, until October of last year, I did not have the year she was referring to written down, but I can imagine it was not so long ago. I never heard of Susan Agnes Bernard or Baroness MacDonald of Earnscliffe, let alone that she had any connection with Jamaica. Then I read a most curious item in a Gleaner from 1892, and the game was afoot. Who was Monkey Baron, and how had his daughter come to be Baroness MacDonald of Earlcliffe? That's apparently what she was asking herself. I soon discovered that Canada knew quite a bit about the story, and Jamaica, practically nothing. So she, as she said, the game was afoot. I can feel her passion. You know, I've never met Dr. Lumsden, but she sounds to be a very interesting person, because once she gets on, that's when you know you have a real history buff. Once she get on to some information, then she will go not stop until she sort of pieces it together. So now this is Dr. Lumsden's report on what she discovered. Now, Susan Agnes Bernard's story begins, strangely enough, at Dirty Pit near Spanish Town. Now, it sounds better if we call it Bernard Lodge, but that had only been its name for a few years when she was born. She was born there in 1836. Her parents, Thomas James and Theodore Fox Bernard, had moved out of Spanish Town to the property at Dirty Pit sometime between 1830, and most of their seven children were born and grew up there. Now, you know, two baby daughters died in 34, so Susan Agnes, the last child, was the one daughter along with four brothers. I can't even imagine people having so many children during those times. Anyway, seven children. Information on her ancestor is in short supply. She didn't have a lot. We don't really know where she was, you know, her ancestors came from. We know that she was born in Dirty Pit. Now, they were originally coming from France via England, probably. She, you know, figures out. Early in the 19th century, they seem to have been mostly in the northwest of the island and St. Thomas. Now, there was some property that was owned in St. Elizabeth, and a link is suggested to Alexander Mackenzie. Now, all of these names are very, very popular names in Jamaica. And I'm sure that, you know, like everything else, there were a lot of children that were not accounted for, I mean, historically. Anyway, most of these people settled in the parish after surviving the collapse of the disastrous Darien expedition, which had attempted a settlement in Panama at the end of the 17th century. Now, Thomas Bernard owned several properties, some in the west of the island, and held a number of important offices, such as a member of the Governor's Council, an assistant judge of the Supreme Court, big shot, none of which indicated a secure financial position. Now, in 1840, the family moved back into Spanish Town. Now, the Bernard boys were sent to school in England, while Agnes, Susan Agnes, had lessons with her mother, and then at a school in Spanish Town. Now, I want to do a little sidebar here. You can imagine we're talking 1834 when this woman was born, and I'm thinking that perhaps it was a midwife or somebody who might have delivered her, because it doesn't. I don't know if there were established doctors. And I remember when we read a lot about the history back then, they talked about, you know, several of the African slaves acting in the capacity of doctors and midwives for the plantation owners. So I just thought it was interesting. Anyway, let me go on with Dr. Lumsden's story. And pardon me, I think my phone is sort of acting up there, so I'm hoping it's not too disturbing. Well, anyway, Susan Agnes moved with her mother into Kingston, and then in August of 1851, they sailed for England on the Great Western to live with relatives there because the father died of cholera. There was an outbreak in 1850. Now, this story really gets interesting now. Now, she and her mother spent about 3 years in England, and she talked about them being, you know, peasants, almost peasants in England, really as poor relations. They did visit the Great Exhibition, but traveling was too expensive for them to do very much. A good deal of the time was spent acquiring or improving the accomplishments expected of a Victorian young lady: singing, drawing, and French. But as it turned out, Susan was not really cut out to be very proper. She was not cut out to be a proper Victorian young lady. Now, here's the turn of events. Early in 1854, Theodora and Susan Agnes set out for Canada to join a brother who was there in Ontario. They all lived in Barrie, just outside Toronto, and I suppose my Toronto friends can know where these places are. But I'm sure none of them think that the first Prime Minister of Canada had anything to do with Jamaica. So I'm sure this will be quite revealing to them. Anyway, Susan Agnes wanted to be called Susie. And she decided for the future she intended to be Agnes. I suppose she was getting a little more proper. She was confirmed in the Anglican Church, establishing her denominational affiliations for the rest of her life. And she also began to develop her love of the Canadian landscape, which was another lifelong enthusiasm. Fishing and sledding were two outdoors activities she especially enjoyed. Now, in 1857, her brother, who was an attorney, accepted the offer of a position of private secretary to John MacDonald. He was then the leader of the Liberal Conservative Party, an attorney general for Upper Canada. Now, Agnes and their mother moved with him to Toronto, this is the brother, in 1858, only to move on to Quebec in 1859, following the moves of the government. Now, it was during this time that Agnes first met John A., her brother's boss. As her biographies tell in greater detail, his personal life involved real problems. Part of his childhood had been very difficult, and his first marriage to his cousin, Isabella, had been stressed by her almost continual ill health and the death of one of their two sons. Now, that wife died in 1858, and his lifelong part of his problems was his lifelong tendency to depression and alcoholism, and they became more acute. Now, on the other hand, he could be very charming and humorous and was becoming Canada's leading political figure. After his wife's death, he became the greatest catch in the country. Now, here comes how they're going to meet. Now, a few years later, Agnes and her mother went on a long visit to England when a Canadian delegation went to London in 1866 to finalize some plans for the Confederation of the Canadian Colonies. She and John bumped into each other while shopping on Bond Street before Christmas. To general surprise, the couple quickly decided to get married, and the ceremony was squeezed into Johnny's tight schedule, taking place at St. George's Hanover Square in 1867. Now, at the reception, he said that his public mission to London was in favor of union, and that as a conscientious man, he felt bound to carry out his own theory. So he sounded to me like he was not necessarily, you know, he was going to be thinking outside the box. But this is my sidebar. Now, they're both from Canada. Her brother is working for this man, But apparently, they never met before they bumped into each other in London while Christmas shopping. Now, she's not a baroness yet, you know. Nothing has happened yet. They honeymooned in Oxford. Then Agnes had to begin the many adjustments needed to becoming the wife of Canada's leading politician. Now, they returned home to live in Ottawa, which Queen Victoria had chosen as Canada's capital in 1858. And they visited John A.'s sister, brother-in-law, and son. So they were sort of getting into, she was sort of getting integrated in the family, I suppose. Now, for the birth of the Dominion of Canada and the premiership of a knighthood for John A., who she married. Now, I won't bore you with the rest of it, but I thought that was very interesting. They had one child in 1869 who happened to have had a birth defect or something. You know, she was consigned to a wheelchair and she was both challenged physically and mentally. Anyway, it went on to say that this woman, this is the interesting part of it, her husband's dream was the completion of the Canadian Pacific Railway, a project which entailed various problems. By 1887, it was possible to ride all the way to Vancouver, so the couple set off in their private railway car, and she called it Jamaica. The name of the car, their private car, was named Jamaica. I suppose she just had fond memories of being there. Now, as they traveled further west, Agnes insisted on riding in the engine car to see the wonderful landscapes better. For several days on top of the cow catcher, which is apparently some place on the train, she, as a matter of fact, he had that special seat nailed for her in that position. I'm thinking this was some wild woman, that she could travel all the way seated so she could enjoy the landscape. Now, I am just thinking that, you know, we're talking way back. And women were not as, I suppose, brave and tenacious as I'm just thinking. Even when I think of the trip that she and her mother made on this special boat from Jamaica to England, can you imagine how long that took? Not only that, I'm sure there were not modern conveniences like when you go on a cruise now. You know, it was not perhaps a luxury liner, and it didn't go very fast. So my point is, women, especially women born in Jamaica, I'm sure she got some of those fresh fruits that we talked about on some of our programs before. And I'm telling you, perhaps if she was born in England, she would not have been so strong, because remember now, most of her brothers died. They had 7 children, and she was the only girl. So I am just thinking how this woman, you know, survived all these things. Anyway, she took care of her daughter, who was challenged, you know, both mentally and physically. But her husband died in 1920. No, I'm sorry. She died in 1920. Let's talk a little bit. But let me tell you. Now, Agnes received many letters and telegrams from well-wishers. Wait a minute. I wanted to back up here. I get carried away with my thoughts on all these things. Now, here we are. By the time Sir John A.'s age was beginning to tell, early in 1891, he won the current general election. but he was obviously ill. In May, he had the first of several strokes, and in June, he died quietly with Agnes at his bedside. Now, his body lay in state. Now, remember now, this is the first official person in Canada, and she stood by him all the time. Now, his body lay in state in the Senate chamber while thousands filed past paying their final respects. After the final funeral in Ottawa, the coffin was taken by train to Kingston, where he was laid to rest. Now, it was after that Susan Agnes Bernard of Spanish Town, Jamaica, became Baroness MacDonald of Earnscliffe in honor of her husband's great service to the nation. Some Canadians were not in favor, but Agnes received many letters and telegrams from well-wishers. The title did not prove to be a financial burden to her, but the photograph of her in her robes to attend the coronation of Edward V show her fully enjoying the status that the title gave to her. Her years of widowhood were greatly occupied with caring for Mary, her daughter. They traveled, she wrote letters and articles for newspapers, and still expressed her opinions firmly. But after her life with John A., everything else was just a postscript. She died in England in 1920, and her death was noted in the Gleaner in Jamaica, with no further reference to her, and so far have been identified. Her daughter Mary lived until 1933, which was, you know, sort of recent. Now, there are a lot of information, as Dr. Lumsden stated here, you know, on different links about this baroness and her marriage to the first prime minister, but hardly anything mentioned of her life in Jamaica. So I just thought that was an interesting piece for especially the Jamaicans living in Canada to discover. So again, I see different callers on the board, 718-631 and Skypers and 770 and 403. So anytime you want to join the Labrish, just let me know. Okay, I see a hand before we start discussing the doctors. I'm going to open up the mic now to 718-379. You're in the Labrish room. Hello? Oh, sorry.
From
Mike.
The headquarters of the New York Yankees.
Yes. Would you say where you are? Our mic was not opened.
Yes, I did. This is Lay in the Bronx.
Oh, okay.
And I just a flippant comment. You mentioned that Susan Agnes got set up on the cowcatcher.
Yes. You know what that is?
Well, of course, a cowcatcher is if a train had a fender,
uh-huh.
The front fender would be the cowcatcher, but.
Oh.
You know, this was a sturdy thing to ward off animals from the train.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm glad you could shed some light on that.
But if she was sitting on that, while it's, you know, that's really risque.
Right. That's what I meant.
That's the only comment I have. But well, that was a very interesting story.
Right. Now, did you ever hear of any connection between the first prime minister there and Jamaica?
No, this is actually the first time.
Wow.
I mean, I've known of the first prime minister, but I didn't know of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, now we're going to switch to Cecilia Williams, who was born in 1893 at Kew Park, Darlington, in Westmoreland, and was educated in Jamaica, partly at Wilmer's Girls' School. Is Wilmer still going, Leigh?
Sorry?
Do you know?
Sorry, say again?
Wilmer's Girls' School.
Much so, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, this Cecilia Williams, who was born in 1893, that's where she was educated. Now, during World War One. In 1914, she was 21 then. She started to take first aid and nursing classes and thought seriously about studying medicine. In 1916, after her father's death, she decided to go to Oxford, her father's alma mater. She was one of the women admitted because there were so few male students during the war. She was 23 then. Again, you know, just traveling from Jamaica to England during the war and to do things like that, you know, at those times, to me, for a woman apparently alone, I mean, this is just amazing to me. Now, after graduation in 1923, Cecilia, she was then 30 years old, decided to specialize in pediatrics and soon applied to the British Colony Office for an overseas position. She was sent to the Gold Coast, now called Ghana, in 1929 and spent 7 years there learning to speak the language and working to improve health conditions. She established clinics and hospitals and improved record keeping. She also worked with African herbal doctors to learn their treatments for diseases for which European medicine had no cures. I thought that was very interesting. Now, Dr. Williams' most important work in Africa was her diagnosis of the common and often fatal condition, and it's called, I spelled it Leigh, and you can pronounce it for me, K-W-A-S-H-I-O-R-K-O-R. Apparently, it's an African word. But she learned that this, whatever they called it, meant this sickness the older child gets when the next baby is born. I thought that was interesting. This seemed to indicate that when they were no longer breastfed, children were not receiving enough to eat. The cure for this condition was therefore education on children's nutrition needs. She quickly published her diagnosis of the condition as a protein deficiency disease, which attracted the attention of the medical world. Talk about a smart woman using her mind. I thought that was really, really exceptional. In the late 1930s, she was transferred to Malaya after suffering from terrible conditions and bad treatment during World War II in Japanese prisoner of war camps. I wonder why she was there, which brought her to near death. She returned to Malaya and was the first woman placed in charge of the maternity and child welfare services. She campaigned vigorously against the promotion by the milk companies of the dried and canned milk as a substitute for breastfeeding in third world countries. Isn't that something? Because she found out that it was because of the lack of the real nutrition that the children needed while they were having this problem. Now, from the late 1940s to the mid-1960s, she worked first with the World Health Organization, then as a university lecturer in Jamaica, England, and Lebanon. Into her 90s, Dr. Williams remained an active speaker in many countries worldwide. On her primary interest of maternal and child health, especially nutrition and breastfeeding, birth control, the health of personnel and the development of health services. Dr. Williams remained an active speaker in many countries worldwide on her primary interests of maternal and child health, especially nutrition and breastfeeding, birth control, the training of personnel, and the development of health services. She was also an active member of the Medical Association for the Prevention of War. She died in England in 1922. She's one of the many outstanding Jamaican women who have received recognition for their contribution to the world's people. Isn't that amazing? Not only did she help the people in the countries that she served, but because of her ingenuity to sort of figure out why these babies, these children were dying, and that the dried milk and canned milk was not a good substitute for the breastfeeding. She was against it. So I just thought that was a great story and shows again how, you know, so many people born in Jamaica that have gone in different parts of the world and perhaps never went back to Jamaica, but contributed a lot to the human race. And I know, have you heard of her, Leigh?
I have to confess I haven't.
No, neither have I. It's the first time that I and Dr. Lumsden has pictures of most of these people on her website. So I would encourage you to just Google Dr. Joy Lumsden on and you will find all her pages.
This is very interesting because, as you know, the European type or European trained doctors, which includes American doctors, never knew how to treat people in other parts of the world. I'm talking about of course, the African countries, but even Caribbean people who would go to a doctor, they would have certain diseases and different ailments that these types of doctors never heard of.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this woman was really on the ball and very innovative at that time to bring to the fore these types of problems that people in the African countries and more than likely also in the Caribbean would have.
Right. And the point is, you know, some of these women were not just thinking this. I thought, think of them as we say now, thinking outside the box. You know, really, really not necessarily following what they were trained traditionally, but using their imagination and their mind and their, you know, curiosity to get to the heart of things, because as you say, Leigh, they could not be trained about it because apparently they weren't exposed to it.
Right.
Neither were their instructors. There weren't any books, I suppose, written then on all these various things that were happening in other parts of the world.
Right.
So it's really, and to know how young she was too, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, things weren't easy. When I think of, you know, after her father's death, she was 23, and she decided to go to Oxford to study. So, and another thing here that struck me, they said she was admitted because there were so few male students because of the war. So perhaps, you know, if it was a war, they wouldn't even have space for her.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say? Because
yeah.
It was definitely and still is a male-dominated field. So that was Dr. Cecilia Williams that we just spoke about. Now I'm going to talk about Dr. Seward Joyce Isaacs, who was born in Mandeville. And her name is spelled S-A-W-A-R-D, Seward. And she was born in Mandeville on March 20th. That happens to be my birthday, too, in 1898, and qualified as a doctor in London in 1924. On July 1, 1924, she was appointed medical officer of the Tuberculosis Commission set up by the then government of Jamaica and the Rockefeller Foundation of the United States. Now, while working with the commission, along with another doctor, Opie, conducted investigations into tuberculosis in Jamaica and recommended ways in which the problem could be tackled. Now, following the collaboration between both of them, the Chest Clinic was built in Jamaica in 1928. And on April 1st, 1936, she was appointed medical officer assigned to that Chest Clinic. Now, the Chest Clinic was at Princess Street and Drummond Streets and served as the diagnostic center for Kingston and the rest of the island. It also served as a follow-up center for tuberculosis patients living in Kingston and St. Andrew. Treatment wards were also set up in some parishes. So this woman spearheaded, actually, you know, the treatment then. And in 1934, she was appointed the officer in the government, the tuberculosis officer in the government medical service, a post she held on till she left with her husband to join the war efforts in 1939. So the women have been blazing a trail for some time now. Now, in 1927, she had also helped to form the Anti-TB League, of which she was chairman until 1979, which is quite recent. The aim of the league is to help needy patients and the families financially and otherwise. Returning to Jamaica at the end of the war, she helped with the Anti-TB League and started the tuberculosis aftercare program. Under this program, you know, former patients learned handcraft and other skills. The program was originally located at the Chest Clinic. However, the premises were acquired at Baker Street in Jonestown, and the program was relocated to that center under the name of CARAWAK Crafts. I suppose that's when she was teaching them, you know, to do things. Carawak Crafts. You ever heard of that?
No.
And I was born and raised in Kingston. I never heard of that either. CARAWAK Crafts. Now, in early 1979, the center was robbed of machinery and materials, and this severely crippled the program. However, efforts were on the way to restart the program by replacing equipment and materials. Now, she retired from the government medical service in 1943, and after her retirement, she was involved with the Anti-TB League and the aftercare program. And she was, listen to this, this is really, she was forced to discontinue these activities.
Are you ready for this?
Because of, you know, they were having troubles in that particular part of the city, I guess. But I thought she had a very interesting background because, Leigh, I don't know if you remember when there was really an outbreak of that TB, as they would call it then, in Jamaica.
Yes, I do.
Yes, and I remember having friends that died. And one of my girlfriends who lives in Florida, her mother worked at a place they then called Black Fence. You remember the name of that? You remember hearing that name?
Yes.
And that is where patients would go when they could do no more for them. I don't know why they called it Black Fence, I suppose, because I'm thinking, you know, in Jamaica we had a name, a different name for everything. And I'm just thinking that perhaps it's because the lungs are so destroyed, or I don't know if the fence was painted black. And I would love if any of our listeners know have any information about that, that they could sort of enlighten us, because this is an enlightening show this evening. We're being enlightened about all of these neat things. So, but I remember it distinctly being called Black Fence. Huh, interesting. Now, she was forced to discontinue her activities because of criminal activities in the area that she used to help. But she was credited for reducing tuberculosis in Jamaica from an epidemic level to one in which only approximately 300 cases of TB was reported each year, and resulting in only a few deaths. So there again, we have one going to help the children in Malaya and in Africa, and we have one staying in Jamaica to help in that case. Now she in that epidemic.
What was her name again?
Her name is spelled Saward. Saward.
How
I would say it. She was Joyce Isaacs. That she was born Joyce Isaacs. But apparently she married Saward, Saward. I'm not quite familiar with that name. I don't know if I heard it before. She was born in Mandeville in 1898.
Yeah.
And was qualified to be a doctor in 1924. Well, I'm telling you, it's something else. But anyway, that is her story. She was, for her contributions to the field of medicine, she was awarded the OBE, Order of the British Empire, for friends of Jamaica who might not know, might not be British, and might not know what that means. So I thought that was quite interesting also. And at this point, I'd like to thank our callers for calling in. And we're always in the backyard on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Labrish. And we're also asking you to spread the word about what we do here because, you know, there might be people that have an interest. So ask them to visit with us and send them a link if you are listening, or come by later to listen and you see a show that you think might interest them. So let's talk about another doctor who was, I think, born in 1901. But this is Dr. Whitmore, Whitborne, Whitborne. Now, she qualified 4 years after Dr. Williams. In 1926, she was the first of these four Jamaican women who were Williams, Isaac, Stewart, Whitborne, and Manley. There was a Manley. I don't have any documentation on her for this evening's show. No, but they practiced medicine. They were the first women to practice medicine in the island. She started her career, this is Whitborn I'm talking about, in Jamaica as a private practitioner and remained in private practice until 1933 when she was appointed assistant medical officer in charge of schools. Now, she was born in 1901, the eldest daughter of Joseph and Mabel Whitborn. She was educated by private tuition and at Woolmer's Girls' School. So who did we talk about, what school we talked about before?
Woolmer's.
It was Woolmer's before, so Woolmer's was hot then, from which she graduated in 1919 after a brilliant scholastic career. I am just wondering if some of the Woolmer's old girls know about this information. Interesting. Now, in 1920, she became the seventh girl to win the Jamaican scholarship based on the results of the London matriculation examination. She's the first Jamaican scholar to have pursued medicine as a career. And then Dr. Lumsden, in parenthesis, says, I think this really means she was the first winner of the girls' Jamaican scholarship to pursue medicine. Now, Dr. Wilburn, trained in medicine at the Royal Free School of Medicine of London University for 6 years, qualifying in 1926. She also gained an honors certificate from the London School of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. I'm wondering if this Royal Free School meant it was free tuition.
Oh.
I doubt it. Anyway, in 1928 to 1930, she was medical officer at Lagos, L-A-G-O-S, Town Council, which is someplace in Africa, thus becoming the first Jamaican doctor and the first female practitioner of African descent to practice medicine in West Africa. Isn't that interesting? Because she was a, you know, descendant of, she had African descendants, and she was the first Jamaican doctor, female, to practice in West Africa. Returning to Jamaica in 1931, she had her application to enter the medical service refused by the director of medical services, an expatriate. He would not even grant her an interview. She then opened her own private practice. Way to go, girl. An opportunity for Dr. Whitborn to serve in medical services came in the silver lining of the rainy weather brought on by the hurricane of 1933. The disaster gave Dr. John Maxwell the opportunity to recommend the appointment of Dr. Whitborn. It's spelled Whitborn here, so it is Whitborn, to the post of assistant medical officer in charge of schools. With her appointment to this post, the medical school service, the first of its kind in Jamaica, was born, and Dr. Whitborn became its first director. I mean, these women are, to me, remarkable. She was also the first Jamaican woman practitioner to be appointed in the Jamaican government service. Clinical work was carried out by her at the Kingston Public Hospital until 1949, when the school health clinic was built at Upper King Street in Kingston. Through her hard work, dedication, and campaigning, the School Children's Lunch Fund was launched in 1937 and money donated by charitable citizens. Now, Dr. Whitborn retired from active service in 1961, and since her retirement had been giving voluntary medical care in the city's slums. However, she has discontinued the service because of increased criminal activities in these areas. Now, she was awarded the KSAC Meritorious Service Award in 1961 after 26 years of service to the KSAC. I don't remember hearing her name. Do you?
No.
Because that was thought of during our time, but I suppose we were too busy with other things.
I'm sorry, I've heard of Whitborn. No, you're making sense out of it, but I've heard of Dr. Whitborn. Yes.
Right, right. But she apparently, you know, KSAC was in charge of so many things in Kingston at the time. Is the KSAC still active? I mean, is it still a body of government?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. But, you know, all of these women contributed in different ways to the culture and to the people that they served. And I just thought it was interesting to me. And since we're here to enlighten, I am hoping that some of our listeners will find this information enlightening. And again, thanks to Dr. Joy Lumsden for bringing all of this out to us. Now I am going to talk about another young lady who was born in Jamaica. Now, what I'm going to read first is what was written about her by this person. I don't know what the letters actually mean, but this was a Reverend George T. Basden, B-A-S-D-E-N, and behind his name is a M-A and a F-R-G-S. You have any idea what FRGS means, Leigh?
No, I don't.
It must be some religious thing, because apparently he was a bishop or somebody. And this is what he's writing. On the morning of Friday, October 7th, 1910, it fell to my lot as acting secretary to welcome Mr. and Mrs. J.B. Stewart to the CMS. NIGER, Niger Mission, and I count it as one of the privileges of my life to have been the one to receive them into the fellowship of the gospel in the IBO county. They had reached ONITSHA, which is a place in Africa, I suppose, on the Stern Wheeler, N-D-O-N-I, apparently that's the name of the boat that they traveled on, late the previous evening. After disembarking, they proceeded to the headquarters of the mission, and for a few days I had the pleasure of their company as my guest. Now, I am assuming that this man who's writing this is the head of this religious body, or for that particular part of the world that he was, which is in Africa. And he is now writing about this family that is coming. Now, Mr. Stewart had for several years labored in the brass district of the CMS. There's that letters again. Prior to returning to Jamaica for follow. Later, the work at Brass was transferred back to the Delta Pastorate, and Mr. Stewart, therefore, came to the section of the mission on his return from Forlo. So he was coming back now, but this time he was coming back with a wife. Lucy was her name. Her name before was Drysdale, D-R-Y-S-D-A-L-E. Then a bride of but a few weeks. So here's this young woman getting married and traveling to Africa with her husband, Mr. Stewart, who apparently was serving there before, and it doesn't say how they met or anything, you know, only that she was a new bride of but a few weeks. Now, Leigh, can you imagine traveling you know, those distances from Jamaica to these parts of the world on a ship. I mean, I just can't even imagine it. I see we have another person who would like to join the Labrish. And at this point, because we don't have a formal platform and we're labrishing, we can just, you know, do our own sidebars and have comments on these interesting stories. So welcome to 631451. Who do I have in the backyard?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hi, Janine. Welcome. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. I was just wondering if they had mentioned that these women were women of color or were they?
Oh, well, she's got pictures on the website, and several of them are. You know, sometimes it's hard to tell with the old pictures.
Right, because going back in the 18, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. But, you know, in many of these, it refers to them as, you know, African descent or, you know, you can tell by their pictures.
Right, right.
But I am just thinking anybody born in Jamaica in those days was eating the yam and drinking the fruits. So they have special tenacity.
all natural stuff.
That's right, that's right. And their brains work faster.
Yes.
Because they're not exposed to the cold and, you know, everything else. In other parts of the world.
Less stress. They didn't have any stress.
Right. Well, I don't know. On the contrary, I don't. Looking back now, I said, goodness gracious, I don't know. But, you know, if you don't know any different,
right.
I'm sure that, you know, whatever place you are in life and place you are on the planet, you know what I mean? You might be having the best of whatever is going on. But this woman, I mean, you talk about personality and just what other people, you know, thought of her was just wonderful. And I'm saying that to say because I always like to connect things that I discover from the past to now and how we can use some of these stories to help to encourage and inspire ourselves and others about, you know, what we can do to leave the world a better place. Because I think that's what we're all here for, you know, to make our mark and leave the world a better place. And so we all really have a purpose. So now I'm going to tell you about Lucy. Lucy was her name. Lucy Imogene Stewart. So she was just married for a few weeks when she takes off with her husband to go to this place.
Yes.
So the Reverend Basden is writing about her. He says, one scarcely thinks that the conditions and prospects could have appeared brighter for a young couple. They were both in sound health and keen to enter into their new sphere of service. They were full of hope. Mrs. Stewart's particularly bright. She indeed retained a wonderful, cheerful spirit at all times, and very seldom did the clouds of despondency fall upon her. A more uniformly happy disposition, it would be very difficult to discover. I also am intrigued about how writers described people and situations, you know, sort of in a different context of how they put their words together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find all of those things fascinating. Now, he talked here that they moved from one place to another. One place was called AWKA, Awaka, which was to be their appointed home in Africa. For a little over 2 years, everything went well. A daughter was born to them in 1911, and their cup of joy was full. In December of that year, I returned from furlough to resume the charge of the training college, Mr. and Mrs. Llewellyn. I knew that. I'm familiar with that name. Also, members of the college staff were just leaving for Jamaica. And Mr. Stewart became my right-hand man in the work of the college and district. Now, from the time of my return from Forlo, I lived in the closest association with Mr. and Mrs. Stewart. And this constitutes the reason why I feel impelled to write this appreciation of the latter. She was always bright, always eager, ready at any moment to do her utmost to forward the work in these parts. And there was no time of pressure in which her assistance was not forthcoming. She often helped in the bookshop. She had sewing classes for the girls and a class for the women attending the church in the town. She was, I venture to think, the most appreciated woman in Awaka, during her residence here, and she was beloved by all. The natives looked up to her and they loved her, especially the younger folk. They loved her spontaneously, feeling that she was ever ready to assist and befriend them. And sidebar now, you can imagine this man is writing about her after she died, I think. He's writing this in appreciation of her. And just the way he explains, you know, in his words, how she affected the people around her. And Dr. Lumps then has pictures of her with these African women around her that she taught, you know, as he mentioned here. Mm-hmm. Now, and so the days pass. I'm back to his appreciation letter. And so the days pass, full of work, but very happy days until suddenly, disease made its blighting appearance. This manifested itself by a slight swelling of the feet towards the end of February. As the doctor had been consulted by her, but a short time previously, and she seemed to be in her normal state. Normal state of health. No great significance was attached to the symptoms for a week or two, especially as we knew the doctor would be visiting Awaka at an early date. Altogether, there was nothing which gave rise to any special anxiety on her account. The doctor came, as a matter of fact, on March 14th and immediately detected the features of Blight's disease. Without a moment's delay, she was placed on the proper treatment. To make this more sure and to secure sound nursing, she was removed to a special place, which I can't pronounce, where she spent the remainder of her days under the unremitting care of Dr. and Mrs. Duitt, D-U-I-T-T. But none did or could have anticipated that the disease would make such abnormally rapid strides. At first, the measure taken seemed to succeed, and it was felt that after a short period of special nursing, she would be quite fit to undertake her journey to Jamaica, and arrangements were being made with this object in view. After 10 days or so, however, it was apparent that the disease was making headway and was not sufficient improvement to justify her attempting to travel alone, and special leave was granted to her husband to enable him to take her home. Now, here's this young bride leaving Jamaica, traveling all the way there, and it seems like she's only there 3 years, you know, helping all these women. And they love her so much, and then suddenly.
Yes.
But it was not to be. God had appointed otherwise. his plans did not coincide with ours, but we gladly acknowledge that he made no mistake in planning for us. Passage had been secured, the baggage made ready for the journey, when it became evident that the idea of traveling would have to be abandoned. On Monday, April 7th, respiratory troubles began to manifest themselves. But what I felt left, well, no, but when I left her on the evening of that day, she was quite bright and cheerful. The next day she managed to get up for a short time, but then proved to be the last, but that proved to be the last occasion. On Wednesday the night, she was seized with a fit in the early morning. Another fit followed on the evening of the same day. Still, the doctor did not anticipate the end was being immediately near, but she died on the 10th. The call came. She weakened rapidly, but no more fits ensued, and she remained perfectly conscious right up to the end. She called her husband and friends around her, and her last words were, "I am going home." Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that something?
Now, all the people around her said, "I was never present at a more beautiful and impressive scene." Isn't that something?
Yeah, that means the sickness went to the brain if she was having the seizures.
Right.
But the fit is what they call seizure.
Right. The next day, we laid her to rest in the cemetery with a large number of our friends. Where a large number of our friends gathered to pay their respects to the dead and to express their sympathy with those who had suffered loss. It was a perfect evening. As the service at the graveside came to a conclusion, the last rays of the setting sun were disappearing below the horizon, while from directly overhead, the pale silver beams of the young moon shone down upon a scene of singular beauty. A more glorious evening could not be imagined. Can you just, isn't that a beautiful way to describe a funeral?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So not only am I intrigued with the events, but how it's captured. I thought that was so beautiful.
Yes.
And, you know, all of these women made their marks in different ways, you know, on other people and on the people, you know, of the whole world. Because even reading this now, what I'm gathering, you know, in spite of everything that was happening, I can imagine for a young woman just getting married, going to a strange country. She'd never been there before. And, you know, things might not have been easy, but she was always so gracious and happy and, you know, just made the best of everything.
Yes.
You know, there's so much to learn.
And she was so giving.
Yeah, there's so much to learn from people of the past, you know, that did something positive, that I am just really hoping that the generations to come will discover some of these beautiful stories about people. I'm sure that every culture has its own wonderful stories, but we can only talk to you know, we're talking to the whole world, but really directing our thoughts and wishes and hopes to the continuance of our culture. And from people, whether you're living in Jamaica or any other part of the world, to know that in spite of what's happening around you, whether it's good or bad, you know, you can make a difference to someone and about something positive. I just think these are just wonderful stories that I personally wanted to bring to light. And I just, I'm so grateful to Dr. Lumsden, you know, for taking her time and dedicating her life to bring us these beautiful details.
Right.
Because there are a lot of times when you can hear about a person, you know, but you don't hear about all of these wonderful parts and how other people describe them.
Mm-hmm.
And with that said, I want to really encourage the seniors of the people of my generation and our generation, I would say, Janine and Lay, to, you know, to participate in what's going on around them. I really wish I had some more contact with Dr. Lumsden, and I'm hoping that one day we will get her on the show. I do send her a link each time, every week, so she apparently will be able to hear how grateful we are. And I will continue to read her documentation as much as I can so everybody can know about some of these wonderful stories. But I also, so that was Lucy's story. Now, she ends it here, and I want to really make this plea, because Dr. Lumsden is always trying to complete whatever she's doing about a particular person, if she feels that it is incomplete or there are any descendants that are living. But I want to read something here that she wrote. I do not know much more about the Stuarts. She doesn't know much about Lucy's husband, Jacob, who had first gone to Nigeria in 1905, and he returned to Jamaica on furlough in 1916, bringing his five-year-old daughter, Eva, with him. He returned to his work in Nigeria in 1917, but by the early 1920s, he had to return to Jamaica. His health was shattered. Now, he died in 1923 at the age of 45.
Wow.
Eva, which apparently was his daughter, seemed to have been brought up by her aunts, her mother's sister, and their names was Drysdale, Drysdale. Now, she attended the Anglican girls' school, St. Hugh's, and then and later received a good education in music. During the 1930s, she became known as an organist, a pianist, and as an excellent accomplished accompanist. At that time, she played chiefly for church functions, but in the latter 1940s, besides having a music studio, she organized a trio. And on into the 1960s, she played at clubs and for visiting singers. I have not been able to find anything more about Lucy's daughter after the mid-1960s. Hope someone can help. So, on behalf of Dr. Lumsden, I want to ask any listeners that may be listening online or have called in or may come by later on, if you have any information about this person who would be Lucy's daughter after the mid-1960s, which is pretty recent, you could please go to Dr. Lumsden's website and send her an email or something with some information. I'm sure that would be quite helpful to her. And so I'm hoping that somebody will know something. Leigh, are you familiar with any of those names?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So, I know that there's a lot of St. Hugh's people around. And I, as a matter of fact, St. Hugh's is here, the alumni here is having something here in Atlanta, I mean, for the listeners. I am broadcasting from Atlanta. My callers are from all over. But they're having a special event next month at which Mrs. Manley, the former First Lady, will be one of the guest speakers. So St. Hugh's is still a vibrant organization. I mean, the graduates all over the country, all over the world, I think. So someone may have some information that they can help to fill in the blanks for Dr. Lumsden, because I know she's so passionate having completion to anything that she feels is incomplete would really make her day. So I'm not putting words in her mouth, but I can just envision that could be very helpful. So you can get in touch with her by going to her website and sending her an email. So that is my story on this wonderful young woman who, lost her life. Well, didn't lose her life, but she died in Africa, just being a joy and a ray of sunshine to the people around her. Now, her daughter's name was Lucy. And they lived until quite recently. So if anyone who knows a Drysdale who was her aunt, Eva's aunt, Lucy's was the mother. So I would like them to send me an email at my website or have somebody call or do something, so we can help to fill in the blanks. So with that said, I want to again thank our listeners for helping to make the backyard a warm and friendly place. I see we have many callers on the board, and we always have people listening online. And I want to know if any of our people with the open mic would like to have any parting comments or stories. Janine, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Now, just listening, I'm just saying to myself, my goodness, I've been there until I left Jamaica in 1969, and it's the first time hearing about these people.
Oh, yes.
And it's really something, you know. Yet we were there, and at no time did we even know that these people exist.
Right, right. So isn't it wonderful to have someone who's bringing all of this to us?
Right, right.
And I know that, you know, the information is online, but I know that a lot of people are so busy that they don't have time. But, you know, when we do our thing on the radio, people can just click on the link and listen to it while they're doing something else on their computers. I just think the technology is so cool and that we need to celebrate it and use it instead of being scared of it. You know, and a lot of the older people tend to be a little apprehensive about the internet and, you know, sharing information and just being visible.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think that, you know, you don't have to be. There are certainly a lot of dangers on there, but you don't have to go to the dangerous places.
Right.
Just think of it, you know, like any neighborhood, there are certain places you don't go, right?
Exactly.
So you go to the places where you know you're going to be safe.
That's it.
And anyway, I just really am so grateful that we are living at a time where, look where we're coming from, you know, in terms of technology.
Right.
To where we are today is like a quantum leap in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I am just excited and I am curious. And I just don't have enough hours in my day to just discover all these new things and use the technology. Now, that doesn't say that I can use all of it, and there's some of it that I don't even want to use, you know. But the ones that serve me, like Blog Talk Radio, I am just very, very grateful for. Because the difference between this and a regular broadcast, let's say that you were coming on Radio Jamaica, like it was called in the old days, if you were not listening at that particular time that the program was being aired, you would have missed it forever.
Yes.
Right, Janine?
That's right.
There's no way you could recapture it.
No.
Somebody would have to tell you about what they said or what they played. Okay. Not so with the new technology.
That's
with
right.
This platform, you know, a year, the shows that we did last year, last week, the first show, you can go and listen to it as if it was playing now.
Right.
So that's the big difference. This is much better than the regular radio, I think.
Yes, yes. Well, as you said, you just said that it's time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then thanks, because you really make it easier for us, because you're the one that's doing all this research. We are just listening and taking it in, and we appreciate it, because if you didn't do it, we still wouldn't know it.
Well, I just get so much joy and pleasure out of it. And I must tell my listeners, too, you know, I'm not a trained hostess or anything. I just had a passion for, I always loved history.
Right.
And I just have a passion for knowing, you know, things. And since I am retired and have the time and the passion is there and my brain still works, I figure I would devote this time to just researching and finding out things, because I know that there were a lot of things that were going on as I was growing up that I wasn't aware of. But, you know, we were busy just growing up.
Yeah, and we weren't taught history, Jamaican history at all.
No. We had the English history going on.
Yes, so, you know, a lot of things really was going on around us. And we weren't aware of it. You know?
Right. Unless, well, you know, and it's similar here. Americans weren't taught a lot of history or things about small islands like ours. So the American people didn't know what was happening with us.
Exactly.
And some of them still don't. So shows like this can be very educational for them, too.
Okay, because we didn't know that we had someone that was married to the president in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Born in, and partially raised in Jamaica.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, as we say in the dialect, we little but with Talawa. Lots of things, historic things.
All the time.
Lots of historic things went on or originated there, and people from Jamaica or that was born there have done just some fantastic things all over the world.
Yeah.
So we continue to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. And we only have a few minutes left. Boy, the time goes fast.
I'm telling you, just when you're getting comfortable.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're here for, to settle into the easy chair. That's what a backyard is for.
Right.
And the lavish. And I just want to thank you, Janine and Leigh, for really participating and being part of the lavish, because it cannot be a lavish with one person alone talking. So I really, really appreciate your support. And I want to thank all the listeners on the board, those Skyping in and calling from different places, and those listening online, and those who may come by later on to listen. So we appreciate you, and we thank you for having an interest. And to let you know, we'll be here next week with another or a couple of other fascinating stories. So please remember to join us and share the information with your friends. And remember, you can always go to backyardlabrish.com and click on the icon for Blog Talk Radio, even if you don't have a personal link from me. And while you're there, if you want to be on our mailing list, just let us know so we'll send you the information about what we're going to be talking for once we decide what we're going to be talking about. So with that said, like I always say, thanks for listening and make it a great week.
Amen.
Good night.
Good night.
See you next week. Bye.
Same time.